the book that we're studying right now is Can We Talk to God by Ernest Holmes. And the chapter that I'm doing is called Unity of Truth. And the whole point to the chapter that I'm doing is that truth is everywhere. And you can find the truth in the music that you hear. You can find the truth in all religions. Sometimes it seems buried, but you can find the truth in science. You can find the truth in philosophy. You can find the truth. And when I first started going to a Science of Mind church, what my minister said was, the only one who can tell you what is true for you is you. And so Science of Mind is a very powerful philosophy because it turns you back toward the knowing that lives within you. It's not finding outside of you the answers. It's finding inside of you the answers. And anything you encounter on the outside, you have to take to the inside and experience it and see if it's true for you, if it resonates with you. And there is truth in every path. There is truth in every place. But how you perceive that truth depends on where you're perceiving from, not what that truth is. It's going to be different from whatever direction you look at it. So if you're looking at God from fear, you're going to see a very different God than if you're looking at God from unity. And the whole point of Science of Mind is to find that one mind, that one heart, that one love, that one life, and realize that life is my life now. And I am living that life that God is. And find it on the inside. And stop looking at it for it on the outside. One of the great quotes that I found early on in this quest for this talk, Reverend Hillary's posted a couple of perfect quotes on Facebook in the last month. I always love, she taps into my talk subjects and feeds me really great information. And she said that Ernest said in The Art of Life, the vital secret lies in the recognition that the spirit of life is ever present where the need is. There also is its answer. Where the problem is, there also is its solution. Perhaps our greatest mistake is that we've been trying to locate this secret place outside of the self. If so, we must turn our spiritual gaze inward. Peace, poise, and the consciousness of power in right action come only through consciousness of partnership with the eternal. The secret place of the Most High is not a location, but a state of thought, an interior awareness, and a spiritual faith. So the biggest mistake we make is to look outside and expect to find our answers. We need to look inside. And so the great irony, of course, is that I found all these answers outside over the course of this month. And Abraham Hicks does workshops many weekends, and they did a great workshop last weekend, and I had all of this great material for this talk for last weekend, and I was ready to go with it. And then in the middle of the week, Esther Hicks announced that she was going to broadcast the weekend workshop this week as well. So all of a sudden on Saturday, I had a new flow of information. So I just set out the intention, Abraham's going to tell me more of what I want to talk about on Sunday. And this is what they said yesterday in juxtaposition now with what Ernest Holmes said. What you are tripping over is that you want there to be something outside of you looking at you and guiding you. And we're saying to you, it can't be outside of you looking at you. You have to have allowed it inside of you looking through you. Oh, hear that. When you've separated yourself from it somehow, some way, when you have separated from yourself temporarily or for a longer period of time, in that separation you are yearning for it, praying for it, wanting it, and disallowing it. You begin to develop this picture that what you're reaching for is outside of you and unattainable. And other people then get together and tell you what hoops you have to jump through in order to get it. And you get locked into an image of this thing outside of you, judging you, evaluating you, watching you to see the behavior that you offer. And what we're saying to you is that there is nothing that is outside of you. There is that which you aren't allowing yourself to feel that is always within you. So let's just breathe there for a moment. And Abraham went on to soften what they had just said, because it sounds like they're judging other religions. And they said, humans want someone from the outside to look at them, like them, evaluate them, judge them, and conclude that they are worthy and just zap them with worthiness. It's bothersome to some to discover it's an inside job. And your question to the person in the hot seat, they said, your question said to us, I don't want this to be an inside job. I liked it better when God was out there and I felt fairly clear about what I needed to do and I didn't need to do in order to get God to like me. And there's nothing wrong with that, Abraham went on to say. There's a certain alignment in that if you are following that. But oh, there's nothing that will ever take the place of step-by-step source energy flowing with you, to you, and through you, helping you with every step along the path. There's nothing that feels better than that, and you all have access to it. You just got to practice it. Reach for it. Notice when you don't have it. Practice some more. Notice when you do have it and practice some more. And what are you practicing? You're practicing an emotion that feels good to you. You're not practicing a subject, a thought, a movement, a science, or a methodology. You're practicing a frequency. What the frequency feels like, the frequency of alignment with Source. We're practicing the frequency of alignment. Humans keep wanting someone else to take them by the hand and show them what to do. And Source doesn't want to take you by the hand and show you what to do. Source wants you to look around the world and decide what you want to do. And then Source will dovetail with you in the fulfillment of everything that you're asking for. And that's what happened to me. Because I was asking, and Source dovetailed with me and brought me information about unity from Abraham, which I expect, from Ernest Holm, which I expect, from Reverend Hillary, which I expect. And from a silly game I'm playing called My Singing Monsters on my iPhone, gave me one of the most potent concepts about unity that I encountered this month. So let me tell you about My Singing Monsters. It's a game that postulates that all monsters are beatboxers in one way or another. They all make a sound. And if you put all the sounds together, it makes music. And so there's ones that have rhythm and there's ones that have melody and they all layer with each other and make music. It's hysterically funny. And as you gather more monsters, they make more music. And the premise of the game is the universe pays them for singing or drumming or whatever it is that they do, playing their instruments. And so the more they play, the more money they make, and the more you can decorate their environment and build them houses and all sorts of cool stuff. So I'm building my monsters a wonderful environment for them to live in, and monsters make more money if you give them what they like. They're just like people. It's a prosperity principle. If you surround yourself with joy, you prosper. So when the monsters are surrounded with what they like, they prosper. If their friends are right there, if the instruments and the bushes and the trees and the stuff they like is right there, they make more money. They're happier. And so after a while, it gets cumbersome because you get five of these monsters and they can't be close enough to the bush. And so the ones on the outskirts are unhappy. The ones right next to the bush are happy, but the ones further away aren't happy. And so in the game, they introduce the idea of the unity tree. And if you buy the unity tree for the monsters, it costs 1,000,000 coins. It's not cheap. But if you invest in the happiness of your monsters, then it doesn't matter where the friends are in their environment. It doesn't matter where the bush is. If it exists, they're happy. Now just take that in for a sec. What they're saying is, in the presence of unity, happiness is non-local. Does that make any sense to you? This means yes, this means no. Happiness is non-local. If it exists, it can make you happy. Even if you can imagine it, it can make you happy. You aren't dependent on what's sitting right in front of you, facing your face. You aren't controlled by the conditions. As Michael said earlier, you can see beyond the horizon, and you can experience the happiness of non-locality. Well, My Singing Monsters gave me the idea that unity brings non-locality into our lives. And that just opened up a whole new experience for me during this time, because I began to see that love is non-local, the happiness factor, that intelligence is non-local, that this unity of truth that can come from anywhere, and ultimately that influence is non-local, that we can move things that we care about in the world by finding our balance first, and then trusting that as we look at whatever it is with love, it has to change. Because we're observing not what's happening in the moment, but the greater truth. We are aligning with the wholeness, with the unity of truth. So that is what's been ringing my chimes all month, is this idea of the non-locality of happiness and influence and love and intelligence that I got from my monsters. So I'm grateful to the monsters and the people who developed that game, because they illustrated the point so powerfully that truth doesn't have to be serious. It can be silly, and sometimes the sillier the better. So Abraham, a while back, said, in the same way that you say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Source is too. God is too. In other words, the frequency is available to all the time. The only question is, where are you in vibrational relationship with it? Are you in that place? There are just so many ways to describe this continuity that we're all living together, and it's just really nice when more of our human friends come to the party. So we allow ourselves to come to the party by connecting to that divine nature that is within us. It's not out there somewhere, although it is everywhere out there, for there is nowhere God is not. But we control the door. We control the valve. The valve opens inward, not outward. So as we open our minds and our hearts to this possibility of unity, then things expand in our lives. Ernest Holmes, again from Reverend Hillary, thanks Reverend Hillary, said, let us dare to plunge into this invisible stream of life, to bathe in its waters. Let us resolve to put aside the cares and worries that have fretted us. Let us seek the solace, the comfort, and the peace of communion with the Oversoul, the conscious union of our mind with the mind of the universe. One heart, one mind, one life, one love, one spirit in the world. Thanks to Tom Kimmel and Michael Lilly for that beautiful song that Michael and Siobhan brought to us, because that is the truth. And the unity of truth comes to us as we resonate with that frequency. Everything we encounter brings us that frequency. And as we practice that frequency, law of attraction brings us more stuff like it. And so somebody said to Abraham last week at the Stanford workshop, I want to love everything. And Abraham said, it's a really bold statement to say, I want to love everything. We would just say, I want to love. And I want so much to love that I've tuned myself to the vibration of love. And now things that are easy to love are flowing into my experience. Don't start with the hardest thing, because then you feel like you can't get there. It feels unattainable. But if you start with the easiest thing, if you start with the kitten or the rainbow or the sunrise or the beautiful flower or the piece of music that gives you thrill bumps, start with the easiest thing and allow that feeling of connection to flow through you. The feeling of love is the feeling of God. And Ernest wrote his book, Can We Talk to God? And the answer is yes. Can we talk with God? The answer is yes. Can we talk as God? The answer is yes. But that's presuming that you are an auditory mystic, that you're about hearing and speaking and music and sound, and we aren't all like that. Some of us are visual mystics. So can we see God? Yes. Can we see with God? Yes. Can we see with the eyes of Source? Yes. Can we see as God? Yes. And some of us are kinesthetic mystics. Can we feel God? We can feel loved. We can feel God's presence. We can feel that power in our lives. I started out as a visual mystic, and I saw incredible visions and things. But truly, moving into that place where I could feel it, that was what opened up the entire universe to me. In 1999, I think it was, I was doing a meditation with a group of people. I wasn't leading it. Someone else was leading it. And I started seeing this incredible image of this wonderful teacher who would reach out a hand and welcome somebody and very gently, without them really noticing, helping them up a step like a curb. Just going from the street up onto the sidewalk. I saw this over and over and over again for 21 minutes. Just one person after another, moving up a step, one gentle step at a time, hardly even noticing it, not even aware of it, just a teacher who could love and help and welcome and move a step, just the tiniest step. Unnoticeable almost step. But it changed the way I experienced what it means to be a teacher. It's not about throwing somebody over a wall anymore. It's about moving a little bit, just changing a tiny frequency, taking a little step. But that vision wasn't the most powerful part of that experience. I saw that vision for 21 minutes. But in the middle of that, some point in the middle of that 21 minutes, my heart felt like it exploded and went out to all the corners of the universe. And when I described it afterwards, all I could say is I felt shot through the heart with the love of God. And it was 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times more than I had ever experienced as a human loving as humans love. Because the way God's love, it's omnipresent, it's unconditional, it's eternal, it's infinite, it's endless. It's so much bigger than we can take in, and yet all the time we can take in more. And maybe David remembers, I cried for 3 hours when I came home because I'd had this amazing experience of feeling that love at such an intense and powerful level. And after that moment, I felt different. I felt changed. And I was talking to a man who channels angels named Stephen Thayer shortly thereafter. And I described this experience to him. And he channels angels, so he talks about angels rather than God or Source. All the people who make that connection call it something different. I call it beloved when I when I write about it. And I describe this experience of seeing the kind of teacher I then wanted to be, this gentle, welcoming person, and then how I experienced this love, this overwhelming love in the middle of all of this. And he said, the angels are as happy for you to have had that experience as you were to have it. And he said, and you perceive that you made a vertical connection. And that's inaccurate because God is everywhere. There's nothing vertical about it. But using that as a metaphor, because you've made that vertical connection, it gives you the opportunity to make a horizontal connection, heart to heart with other people, where you have brought that frequency to the planet and you can share it with other people. You can share that experience, and they may not have had that experience, but they can feel it through your experience. And you can allow that to become a bigger part of the universe, a bigger part of the world. And those who are in a vibrational frequency that's close enough to you to feel it can then carry it with them and share it heart to heart with other people. Well, that was my experience, you know, as a visual mystic and then having that incredible kinesthetic feeling of what the love of God feels like. And each of us have gifts and talents and abilities. We come with a constellation of gifts, a kind of connection. Now, it's different for everybody. You know, I can't play the guitar, and I wish I could sing like Siobhan sings. Nobody sings like Siobhan sings. I don't have that gift, but Michael and Siobhan have that gift. And Carrie has a gift, and Felicia has a gift, and David has a gift. Each of us here in this room have a gift of love to share. Whatever it is that we love, as we do that, you know, Brian plays music. He shares the love that he has in the music that he plays, even if nobody else hears it. And that addresses the non-local nature of this influence that we have in the world. Abraham was talking to a musician last week in Stamford, in fact, and this guy said, last night I was at an open mic and I felt so good. It was just such ecstasy to connect with people, to have that moment. And Abraham said, we want to give you something here, because we hear people say that phrase often, connect with people. And if you are hearing us, you are realizing that your connection is with Source. And their connecting with you will be up to them or not. You don't want to work too hard to connect with people because they might not be where you want to be. And the guy in the hot seat, the musician, said, true. So what I was feeling is I was connecting with my Source. And Abraham said, there you go. And the guy said, and it felt so good. I get what you feel. Even when I'm not in front of people, when I'm by myself and I do my piano thing, I get to that point. I surprise myself. Wow, that was amazing what I just did. Even though nobody heard it but me. And Abraham said, now you're forgetting all of us again. Don't discount the non-physical who is aware of you. In other words, you said nobody heard it. And Abraham said, we not only heard it, we helped it. We inspired it. We co-created with you about it. We are all in it together with you. We're not separate. We're not alone. We're not this local thing that is a clump on a chair. We are part of the unity of the whole. And as we find that frequency of Source, we share with the heart of God. We love from that place. We write music from that place. And, you know, I've told the story every time Michael's been here about Kate and I being at Starbucks and crying because we heard Shine On. And we heard that message, that powerful message about commitment to being the light that Michael wrote. You know, he wrote it about a lighthouse along a coastline. And I heard that vibration, that frequency of source, and I cried at Starbucks because it moved me so deeply. And as we share who we are in whatever way we're inspired to, it could be making soup or rocking a baby, in our loving, in our being love, in however way we do it, it's Aaron asking for whatever mom cooks. Please bring me whatever mom cooks while I'm away at college. It's finding that truth. And it's whatever we want to do in the world. You know, I want to tell people and help them feel how deeply they are loved. Susan was talking last night about wanting the answer to energy and seeing exponential improvements in solar power. You know, I would never think of that in a million years, but that's what turned Susan on. And as we imagine things shifting in the world, we can influence the shift. And I am, you know, like the least political person on the planet. I don't read the news. I don't listen to TV. I don't read the paper. I don't talk to people about it if I could possibly avoid it. But during the night, all I could feel was this powerful urge to send love to everybody who's trying to make decisions, who's feeling hated, who's feeling conflicted and resistant and is unable to hear their guidance, even though all the answers are there, because all they're feeling is complaints and criticism. They're not connecting with their love. And if we can see the love that's here already, then more of the answers can come. And yesterday during the workshop, Julie Barr, who is the most outrageous comedian, who has pink hair and is on a lot of the Abraham cruises, David knows her too, she was in the hot seat and she said, I'm getting on a cruise ship with 400 Democrats this afternoon. What can I do to help? And Abraham said, distract them. The answers are already there. They just need to laugh and remember. And there isn't one big answer. There's a gazillion tiny steps, and each person will find the step that's right for them. And as we allow our love to influence the world, it can make a difference. Even if we never go there, if we never touch those people in the physical world, we can touch them in the mental world. Last week at Stanford, they said, when you understand your vibrational nature and you feel for resonance with source within you and you catch your thoughts in the early subtle stages before the momentum of them is so strong, you can get so that you are directing your thoughts in powerful ways and you'll begin to feel as if you're worthy beyond your ability to describe it, because all of the forces of the universe, seen and unseen, are backing you up in your absence of resistance and yielding to you the path of least resistance that leads to anything and everything you desire. You could sit in your home on one side of the world in this alignment of energy, feeling your well-being and feeling love for mankind. And you could focus on a situation somewhere else, not in blame, not in struggle, not in worry, not in doubt, not in hatred, but in sheer and genuine appreciation of your fellow humans, wanting them to eat, wanting them to lead life well. And in your alignment and focus, you could affect an outcome without traveling to that place, without sending your dollars, with the power of your deliberate focus. Because you are the creator of your reality, and anything that you give your attention to is part of your reality. Our capacity to love, our capacity to feel, our capacity to know is influenced by our connection to the eternal and infinite nature of love and intelligence and abundance and joy and well-being and grace. It's the truth. That's the unity of truth that I know, that I totally believe in and know. And as we allow ourselves to tap into that, we become the local representation of the non-local possibility. And doors open, and it becomes a whole new world. A whole new world. But we have to open the door because it opens on the inside. And we have to practice the frequency when we're in it, and notice when we're in it, and notice when we're not in it, and practice again, and notice when we're in it, and notice when we lose it, and practice again, and notice what pushes our buttons, and practice again, and let go, and love. Because that's all that's really necessary. And we don't know that it's worked because we haven't done it before. We've tried with the action, we've tried with the words, we've tried with all of the activity. And I think that what we're about, what I'm about, is trying with the love and allowing the love to lead. And when the love leads, you come up with new ideas, you get inspired to a different action, and the possibilities continue to shift, and the ripples go out and out and out and out, until what we see out there matches the love that we feel in here. Because it starts on the inside and goes out. And then when we're there on the inside, we see it everywhere. Because that's the unity of truth. And that's my truth today, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you.